Every day in America, thousands of nerds suffer from cruelty and neglect. Thousands were able to buy Hatsune Miku body pillows last year. But for thousands of others, anime DVDs and Crown Royal bags filled with dice arrived too late.
Hi, I'm one of the System Mastery guys. Will you be an angel for some dork? Every day, nerds are abused, ridiculed, and friend-zoned, and they're crying out for help and Taco Bell. Please call the number with the gift of Mountain Dew or one of those mouse pads where the wrist support sort of looks like boobs. For just $18 a month, only 60 cents a day, you'll help rescue nerds from having to talk to regular people with jobs and provide Wi-Fi, Doritos, and love. Call now and you'll receive this welcome kit with a photo of a nerd in some basement right now. One who's been given a fedora and some jorts, thanks to you.
Right now, there's a nerd who needs you. Your call says, I think of you more as a friend. Please, call right now. Hello there, and welcome to Afterthought, the companion piece podcast at System Mastery, where every other week we get together and discuss topics of interest of the day.
Ah, the topics of interest. Yes, we will be discussing such highbrow things as the price of tea, or what it's like to travel around the countryside.
Oh, Sir Jonathan, what news of the London season?
Why, Jeffersley.
Jeffersley? I like it.
Oh, Jeffersley. You always have such great companion pieces.
How you doing, John?
I'm all right. It's quite the day.
It's been a long day, because we had to do a movie mastery and today's Afterthought.
And everything.
It's a busy one. It's, you know, we have jobs now. And we only have one day off a week that lined up, so here we are.
Here we are, together at last.
Yep. So, what did we review last week? What was the System Mastery?
It was Gamma World.
Yeah, that seemed to be a big hit with people. I mean, granted, we both really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you love Gamma World? That shit's amazing.
I've had a couple people... I've seen people emailing, they're saying, hey, I like Gamma World, but what if it's too silly for me? What's the next thing I should try? And I'm like...
Not Gamma World?
It's also Gamma World. You should just play it without silly.
No.
Just play it deadly serious.
If you're trying to play Gamma World deadly serious, I feel bad for you, son.
I've got 99 problems, and you are one of them. But not Gamma World. It does not have 99 problems.
No. It has, like, you know... Three.
There's a couple issues here and there. There's not that many. It's a fairly solid system. I think one of the things I found most remarkable about it, and as we cast about for something to discuss for this week's episode, is that it's rare for a game to have so much randomness built into it and still be pretty cool.
There were those games in the 90s, I mean like Rifts, all those Palladium games where so much randomness was built into charts, and you had... pretty much two schools of thought. You either had your, like, GURPS, which everything was point by and nothing was random, or you had stuff like Rifts, which just went, no, everything is random. You roll for literally everything.
Even if it doesn't make sense. Like, no. The one I always point to is how if you wanted to play as a robot, then you rolled randomly for your starting budget.
Yeah. So, the fact that you also had to roll randomly for your stats was like, oh, well, if I was just point buying with my budget for stats... then I guess that's the same as rolling randomly for stats. But since you also did that, you're like, oh, if I rolled poorly for both of these, I'm just garbage.
Yeah. I mean, and there are other games famously out there, even ones we haven't touched on yet, like Phoenix Command, for example, where you actually roll the variance of ballistics where, the bullet might bend slightly to the left or right while flying through the air. We need to roll on that table, too.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember hearing a lot of stuff from a lot of my friends that played the Hero system. Mm-hmm. That there was, if you wanted to get into the deep system, you could get into, like, trajectories for throwing grenades and what level of bounce it would have. So, yeah, there are games where you can randomize a lot of stuff. But with this one, with Gamma World, I feel like it works because there isn't
50 million charts of random stuff. It's mostly just, all right, you're going to randomize your starting, but after you've done that, it automatically takes care of you. So even though you randomly rolled up what your two classes were, you automatically get good stats in both of those. So whereas before, if you were like, oh, I randomly rolled to see what I would be, and oh, I rolled a fighter, and then I randomly rolled to roll my stats, and it turns out I have a 5 in strength. Well, fuck me then.
Right. So one of the things that, we didn't get a question about this exactly, but one of the comments left on the Gamma World site said, well, it was from a person basically saying, well, I actually like playing characters who have a handicap from time to time. I don't really, because one of our comments during the episode was, I like that this game lets you assume baseline competency in your important roles, because yes. You get an 18 in your primary, 16 in your secondary, the rest are 3d6 down the line, but those stats don't really matter as much. And I was saying, this is good, because I like games where you assume baseline competency. There's a reason that your character is an adventuring hero, and it's not because they're a nitwit or, you know, the ugliest man in town or anything like that. It's because they're good at something. And we got a comment that was basically along the lines of, but I like playing a disabled person, or not a disabled person, but a person with a handicap, a person with a problem. And thing is, I agree with that. I think it could be an interesting role-playing challenge.
As long as you go in with that in mind.
Yeah, like, it's got to be a goal in the first place.
Yeah, if I'm playing, say, Dark Heresy, and I go, oh, you know what I want to play is an Ogryn. So I want to be kind of slow. I want to be kind of like a Drax from Guardians of the Galaxy, where I'll just take everything very literally and not be very intelligent, but super strong.
Yeah.
And you can do that and go, oh, that's my character concept. So if I have a low intelligence, that's fine. That's what I wanted anyway.
Well, that's actually an interesting thing. If you come into it in the first place, if you're like, all right, my goal is to play an Ogryn with a rocky sort of head, who's just sort of literal and dumb, then that's an interesting characterization for how to play a stupid character, right?
Yeah.
So that's fine. You go into it. If you roll a 3 when you're building your fighter, do you have that in mind? Or do you just go, I guess he's a retard, darp?
Like, yeah, that's the problem, is when you're forced into doing one of those and you don't have that in mind as a character, I think people tend to overdo whatever it is.
Yes.
So even if you get, like, slightly low. So, I mean, there have been plenty of times where I've played with someone who's like, oh, I made a dwarf, and they get a penalty to charisma, and that took my charisma down to 7. And they just run around, like, shitting on people and yelling obscenities. I'm like, no, you're at a 7. You're not at a 2.
Yeah.
Like, your charisma is mostly just, oh, people kind of find you off-putting.
Yeah.
And not, you are actually throwing your poop at them.
Yeah, like a dwarf with a 7 constitution should really sound more like, hey, yo, Trump's gonna make for a better America!
We're gonna build a wall. We're gonna make the elves pay for it.
Yeah, that's a dwarf with a 7 charisma.
Yeah, but when you are forced into a low stat and you don't have an idea of what that means to start with, and then you immediately jump into play, I think that just hinders what you're trying to do rather than helping.
Yeah. And keep in mind, when I say that playing a low intelligence it's kind of a stereotype that players have where they go, oh, I guess my character's retarded. I don't actually condone that. I think it's terrible.
No, that would be awful.
Yeah, don't do it. It's always strength, intelligence, and charisma that you hear these things about. Where people are like, well, my character's the stupidest person in the world. He tries to walk into a door for an hour, derp. Don't do that. Don't play your character that way. Why would anyone let him go on an adventure? But if you have some forethought, if you go in and say, I'd like to play a character who's weak or who's not especially dexterous, then you can go in and build your character around a low roll. The dice don't need to build a handicap into your character. People can do that themselves.
Yeah, and again, even if you did have a very low, like, strength or intelligence or whatever stat happens to be in your game, that doesn't mean you can't comprehend the world as it exists.
Yeah.
Being like, I have a low intelligence, so it means I try to eat this glass shard. And you're like, no, man, you're a human. You understand things. Like, you realize that animal intelligence is still like a 3, which means if you have a 3, you can be at least as competent as a dog.
Yeah.
Like, the dog isn't trying to eat that glass shard, so probably you shouldn't either.
That's a very good point. If you're playing a 3 intelligence, you should be at least as smart as a dog.
Like, in fact, just do that. Just walk around, be real friendly, be like, did I do a good job? Okay, good. I'm real excited about that. I'm real happy. Are we going to eat soon? That'd be great. I'd love that.
I divide the world into people and then not very nice people.
Hey. Oh, you're all right.
I see another fighter.
Hey, fighter. Hey, fighter.
Hey, this is my group. Oh. We don't need any more fighters in this group, but let me smell your butt, though.
Yeah, I would love that. I would do a Wii 3 campaign where it was just D&D, so you're like, oh yeah, we've got a fighter that's a dog, and we've got a rogue that's a cat, and then your rabbit can go ahead and be your wizard.
And then they have to go on an amazing journey.
Yeah.
Or an incredible journey. I don't know, one of those.
And then they mostly die at the end, and it's one of the saddest comics I've ever read.
All right. So, I like randomness when it can be used or deployed in an interesting and fun way. One of the things about Gamma World that really let it hit that mark was that it just was like, okay, here are 20 classes you can be. Roll randomly. Don't worry. They're all pretty competent.
And the other big thing with it was, even if you rolled into something, and we mentioned it before, but if I roll into Hawkoid or Cockroach or whatever, that doesn't mean I am literally a hawk guy or a cockroach. You can be any type of weird bug-like thing or any type of bird-ish thing. And when you combine two, you can do whatever. I mean, for the characters we made, it's not like either of them were particularly informed by
no,
the role.
Mine was completely wrong, and yours was completely wrong.
Yeah, but yeah. It allows for skinning is the big thing for Gamma World, is you can skin whatever you got into whatever you want.
Yeah, I think it was a fantastic engine. So, anyway, what else do we want to talk about relating to Gamma World? Do you have anything?
Nah, not really. I mean, like, my least favorite thing during the episode was the Monster Manual, which I still stand by, of if you've got something, especially in a D&D-type game with levels, make sure you have some threats for every level, and don't be too, like, bottom-heavy or top-heavy on where you're placing them limit-wise.
Yeah.
So that, or you can have, like, 3rd edition famously towards the end of it with the, or not 3rd edition, 4th edition, the 3rd monster manual for it had the monsters on a note card. Like, you could do a business card for the monster math.
Yeah.
And the monster math was a graveyard smash.
That's the point.
The monster math. It caught on in a flash.
It was a graveyard smash.
You're caught on in a flath.
You're Thor? Well, it hurts. Okay. One of the other comments we got about the Monster Manual, by the way, was I was saying that I thought the names weren't especially evocative. They were all, you know, you pointed this out, too.
Yeah.
They were all stuff like Blash and Hoopdur and so on. And someone pointed out, and they're right, I went back and checked myself, all the monster names are taken from all the way back in, like, 1978, the first edition of Gamma World.
Yeah, but so, I don't care. That doesn't excuse them.
I think it's kind of cool, though. That gives it a historical connection to what is admittedly a way worse game than
this. Yeah, it has historically bad names.
Well, it's fine. At this point, they're ironically bad names. Like naming your kid Cannon.
Like, Cannon, like I shoot things, or Cannon, like this is what has been established?
The second one. That's okay. The worst name you could give a kid.
All right.
Yeah, because that points out that not only did you want to give your kid a name, but you're not going to buy him a dirt bike when he's 14. Instead, you're going to teach him about Expanded Universe Star Wars.
See, I was expecting you were going to say, oh no, at that point he gets 14, you're giving him like Shakespeare and de Balzac.
Oh, that canon. Yeah, yeah. I guess it could be that too.
The literary canon.
All right. So you want to answer a couple of questions?
Yeah, let's go ahead and get into it. We had so many questions this time.
And a lot of them are like lists and so on and big letters. So we might as well start with some letters. Why don't we go on down to the letters section here?
Ah, the men of letters.
Okay, I'll start this off. Dear Masters of the Great System, I am Rory, the poorly named one. All right, look, I'm sorry, okay?
You shouldn't have done it.
I was just in a bad mood.
You brought it on yourself.
Rory McButtwop wasn't that bad. I mean, it's pretty bad.
Ah, you suck so bad.
It's pretty bad.
You done fucked up.
I'd like to know, if like to know a couple of things. I'm going to go all strong bad emails on this one. First of all, who has the best elbow and how much of your hand can you fit in your mouth? A couple fingers. I don't really try that hard to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I don't know. I'm going to say I have the best elbows. There.
Yeah, John, sure. Why not?
Let me have that? Sure. I got big man elbows. John has the elbows of a Frenchman.
Yeah. I've got those dainty French elbows.
Yeah. You know how it is.
I can't even play tennis.
Yeah. His elbows won't even get off the ground for less than like an olive or a couple of figs. Yeah. Or I got work elbows. Secondly, my main problem with 3.x and Pathfinder is how broken it is. My friend and his dad and their group that occasionally game with us are huge grognards. They insist that it's balanced, so to prove them wrong, I decided to make a super crazy character to break the campaign wide open. It was 5th level, so I made a half-orc, half-dragon, dragon man, monk 1st level. I ended up with a 36 strength and 126 hit points or something. I popped off about 8d10 plus 70 damage per round and could fly. It was terrible, and now we've moved on to 5th edition. So the question is, what is your best story where you gamer the system and broke everything? I don't like doing it usually, it's super annoying, but it can be funny on occasion.
Well, you broke 4th edition, essentially, with your dumb ranger build.
Oh, yeah, my dual-wielding ranger that could do, like, 245 DPR.
And was unhittable.
Yeah, that was fun. I made a character, and I wasn't trying to break the game or anything. That was actually a baseline level 14 Beastmaster ranger using the dual weapon abilities.
Well, it's because our DM at the time was like, oh yeah, here's a level of gold. Pick any magic item that you could buy with that.
That
is the wrong thing to tell someone.
That class wasn't broken that much by magic item. In fact, the most powerful thing I took was I took that Piwafwi instead of a regular cloak of protection. It was the neck item and it had a bunch of fire resistance and stuff on it. That was pure skill building. That character was... I just made a regular Beastmaster Ranger, and you know what? I would still play that guy in a heartbeat because he had a great story.
Huh.
That was... I think his name was Nico.
Yeah,
Nico, the Beastmaster Ranger, who was a human ranger raised in the gladiatorial fighting pits of the Drow.
Indeed.
Yeah, and he was a fun character. Thing is, though, I don't get that chance very often. Normally, I'm a big power gamer, and I like to build big, unfortunate, broken characters. But you could picture me as Sisyphus, trying to push a giant rock up a hill, only to have the rock move away and roll back down the hill and not let me do it. And that rock is my friend Brian.
Brian is my rock.
Yeah, Brian is John's rock. He's my rock as well, but in my case, he's a horrible rock who won't let me have any fun.
Yeah, no. He is the rock that I built my church upon, and for you, he is the rock you attempt to push up a hill, and then he goes back down.
Yeah, he won't let me cheat. Every time I'm like, hey, I think I figured out how to break this, he's like, hey, you seem to be breaking that. I'm going to fix it. And I'm like, no!
No,
so
why?
It's been a long time since I've had a chance to really break a campaign wide open.
Yeah, I think any time I ever did it, I was allowed to get away with it once.
Yeah.
That was our DM's thing was, if I came up with some stupid bullshit that I would pull, he'd go, great, it works this time. If you try and do it again, it doesn't.
Yeah.
I went, okay, that's fine. It keeps me creative, because now I can't just lean on one stupid gimmick. I have to continually come up with stupid gimmicks.
I would say a long time ago when I was playing a campaign in the local nerd store, and it was a big second edition D&D campaign, I was displeased with how much bullshit was already present when I got there. Like, the party was just bullshit. So... in an attempt to, what I thought, being 14, I was like, I'll show them, I'll make an even better character. I talked them into letting me use the psionics manual, and I used all the teleportation stuff to just build a character who just worked with physics instead of the game rules.
Yeah.
So I'd be like, alright, I open up a dimension door below you, and then the entrance to it right above you, and you just fall till you hit maximum velocity, and then I cancel the spell. And I would just do that all the time. That was all I did. So that was a character that just broke the game open, because mostly, though, because the DM let me.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, no, anytime you have one of those stories, it's always because the DM let you.
Yeah.
Like, if you show up with, you know, a half-orc, half-dragon, dragon-man monk that flies and can do 8d10 damage, and your DM goes, yeah, that sounds good, let's go ahead and play that, that's his fault.
Yeah.
Because if you show up with that and he doesn't say, no, that's bullshit, stop that, stop doing that.
My last one I really enjoyed making was a paladin monk. In 3rd edition, I made a paladin monk multiclass. It was a halfling, and I did it just so I could get maximum saves.
Yeah.
So I was just like, alright, this character saves against everything. Does he do any damage? Oh no, his punches do like a d4.
No, he is just the worst at this, but he will save.
He will survive.
As long as he knows how to roll.
You know he'll stay alive.
Oh god, okay.
Alright, let's move on to the second half. 5th edition, you don't seem to like it. I really enjoy it because of the simplified skills and feats. Above all, I really like the way that the rules for every class and race really express the feel of it and how it's played and works in combat. The abilities you get are cool and not just fiddly plus ones. I miss the warlords, but the warlocks are absolutely amazing and the coolest thing to touch RPGs besides rifts, maybe. Maybe. It's a little bit less balanced than 4th edition. Circle of the Moon Druid can get like 90 HP per encounter, this is true, and it has really strong, flavorful mechanics. In addition, it's funny to go through and put all the short, long rest abilities and draw them as 4E powers, and it's so similar. That is also true. Changing the names seemed to be enough for a lot of people. Finally, I really like how it takes the concepts from AD&D and makes them not terrible, especially in the DMG. You know what, though? The DMG in 5th edition, it's true. It's not a bad DMG. It's a lot of good advice.
Yeah.
The problem is it needs to be, because one of our big issues with 5th edition is that half the answers to the questions in the game or ask your DM.
Yeah, there's not a lot of guidance in the main player's handbook.
Yeah.
Also, fucking, it is the year of our Lord 2016. Stop putting out 3 books.
Yeah, there's that. It's been a while since, I mean, granted, we champion 4th edition, like, it's going out of style, and that's got, like, 9 core books.
Well, yeah, but those are all additions to it. I'm saying, even then, fucking, you don't need a main player's handbook and a monster manual and a DMG as 3 separate books. That's garbage. Stop doing that, wizards, you greedy bastards.
We should probably do, like, an afterthought sometime that's just about the things that are good or bad about 5th edition D&D. Like, because it's got some good notes. The thing is, most of the good notes are, at best, mediocre notes. It's like, well, it sure does this if you want. And then the bad stuff is mostly the same thing. It's just mediocre bad. Like, oh, we forgot to put in a thing, but ask your DM.
Yeah, that's my thing with 5th edition is it's not offensive in any way. So when you go to 5th edition from some other game, you're like, oh, well, this doesn't have, like, the ridiculous glaring problems that you'll see in a lot of the things that we review.
But what it has instead is nothing.
Yeah, it's just very light and airy.
Yeah.
It is the marshmallows of games. So you're like, oh, that's pretty good, but if all you're eating is marshmallow, you're like, I'm kind of over this now.
Yeah. Nothing really wrong with it. I'd probably play 5th edition if a friend was offering, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just not my favorite. So there you go. One of these days we'll talk about it in more greater length. All right, let's see here. This is a really interesting letter I wanted to read. And it says, hi, I got a random email from someone who'd heard of my game, Vanishing Point. Which means that this letter is from Ashok Desai.
Oh, it's from the twisted mind of Ashok Desai?
That's correct, yeah. Through your podcast the other day and was looking for a copy. I didn't even know you'd reviewed it, so thanks for that. It's a pretty old game of mine now and probably hasn't stood the test of time all that well. But then neither is the rest of the industry, so hey. Just thought you might like to know what a rarity you've got there. The first printing of Vanishing Point was a Crown Quarto hardback that only ran to 500 copies. The second print was the revised edition that you have, and a grand total of around 50 were made before the printing company I used went out of business. So yeah, we have one of 50 of that book. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. As far as I was aware, all those books had been destroyed because I was never given a penny of the profits. I'm guessing the game shop you got it from probably bought it in a job lot of other stuff when the printer went under. Probably not, but it's probably been bouncing around for a while, because it was on a used shelf.
Oh yeah, I assume someone sold it to our local game store, who got it somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, probably one of the people that worked there, like, at the printing company, I'm sure they were like, oh, well, no one's getting these, whatever, I'll take one.
Yeah, we'll just sell them for pennies to someone else, because people will buy D&D. He's right, people will buy used RPGs by the pound.
Oh yeah.
So, anyway... So yeah, you're holding one seriously limited edition there. I've thought of re-releasing it, but I don't really think it's worth it, given the current state of the industry. Ash. So, let's talk briefly about this. Vanishing Point was awesome.
It's one of the few ones that we've reviewed that, going in, we didn't know we were going to enjoy at all.
Yeah. No, we had no idea, and it took us by surprise, and was a killer game. I mean, it's got some crazy stuff in it that I remember, even though I believe Vanishing Point is episode 35 of System Mastery, and we just put out episode 60, a lot of it sticks with me. Remember how it didn't use D10s because they're not platonic?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was hilarious. I loved the whole mental issues as classes system that it used. It was just really clever.
No, it had a very good system there. We definitely talked about some of the failings of the system as well, but... For the setting and for what it was trying to do, it was at least innovative and clever.
I never thought I'd be talked into liking a steampunk genre game. And yet it was so cleverly done, and it wasn't really steampunk. It was really more sci-fi with some steam in it.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't a bunch of Victorian proper people going like, oh, I put a gear on my hat, don't you know?
Yeah, those existed, and they were mostly jackasses.
Yeah. Instead, you've got this, which is, oh man, you play as like a spider inhabiting a guy's eye.
Yeah, like, I'm a dude made entirely out of scissors.
Yeah.
Like, all right, neat.
Yeah, it's cool. So anyway, you should definitely consider re-releasing that, Ashok. The PDF market these days is fantastic. I mean, I actually spent some time emailing back and forth with him, and he told me that while he has some masters, they'd be hard to convert to PDF. But definitely, I think people, just from hearing us, probably know that it's a worthwhile thing to pick up. And a PDF of it would probably sell. I'd probably pick up a copy, because I think John's the one who's got the actual copy of Vanishing
yes.
Point. So, he's the one with the rarity.
Yeah! I got that and that Stormbringer sitting on my shelf. I got the rare books.
You got the rarest of books. And Pepe's.
I know. I'm not even going to show you my Pepe. That's how rare it is.
So anyway, thanks for the email. It's really cool to hear from one of the writers of the games you review. I mean, normally they're angry at us, but good on you. All right, and now, one last letter to go through here. This one's from Chris. It says, like everybody else, I sat right down to design a micro game after I heard your Panty Explosion game.
Obviously.
Or episode. My game uses the best aspects of Panty Explosion's rules. Well, there's only like four rules, so...
Yeah, the best aspects.
But it's actually about exploding panties. Okay, that's a good thing.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta call it something else now. You can't call it Panty Explosion if it's about exploding panties. I don't even know what you're gonna call it. Down-home, regular Japanese schoolgirl game. The adventure.
It's just called Sakura Blossom.
Yeah, Sakura Blossom. I think it turned out great and could very well become the go-to system for panty-based gaming. All right. Here's the problem. My micro game needs a cover. Now, even more than I have been all my life, I'm looking for full-page Creative Commons images of girls in magical panties. I'd greatly appreciate help from your listeners in finding a suitable cover, and I feel that you two owe me a signal boost, as it's your fault that I wrote a panty game to begin with. If I can find a cover, I'll send the game for you guys to link to on the fridge. So this guy must be a listener. He knows we have a fridge.
Yeah.
So if you do read this on the show, let your listeners know that they can send me links or original art at gamablepixarpodcast@gmail. Oh, okay. He's Gameable Podcast.
Yeah.
All right. That's cool. All right. So these guys are some of our followers on Twitter. They do a thing about gaming and connecting it to Pixar and D&D movies.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some discussions because of our deep and eternal love for the greatest Disney movie that's ever been produced. A Goofy movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we both agree.
But which one? I mean, I know it's a Goofy movie. But...
Oh, well, it's obvious. It's a Goofy movie, not an extremely goofy movie.
Oh, okay.
An extremely goofy movie is an extremely terrible movie with a bunch of disco nonsense and going to college and boring. It's just not good.
Oh, yeah, that's like Saved by the Bell, the college
years. Yeah, it is. It's exactly like that. Or like one of those weird spin-offs of Married with Children where like Bud becomes a DJ for a day. Just, you don't want that. And Mayim Bialik is there. And you're like, what the hell is this? Freaking Backdoor Pilots. No, it's no.
Also, be sure to watch my new movie, Backdoor Pilots.
That's going to come on right after my new movie, Men in Black Men. All right. So if you do read this on the show, let your listeners know that they can send me links or original art at gamablepixarpodcast@gmail.com. No photography, small... Oh, come on. You know, I want... If you have photography of girls in magic panties, send it to systemmastery@gmail.com. Thank you. No photography, small images, or images I can't legally use, please. And nothing pornographic or overtly sexual. Once again, if you have anything pornographic or overtly sexual, please send it to systemmastery@gmail.com.
If you're a huge nerd and you want to put on a skirt and show me your panties,
don't. This is a game about empowered schoolgirls with action panties. Thanks, Chris.
There you go. Action panties. It's happening. It's coming to a game store near you.
Ooh, okay. So there you go. A couple of really nice letters this week. On to real questions.
Real questions.
Not those fake questions from, like, actual writers of the games we review or anything.
Yeah, no, this is hard-hitting journalism.
Yeah, we're gonna get a Pulitzer for this.
Yeah, I'm gonna frost your Nixon.
Yeah, or a Pulitzer surprise, whatever that is.
Ah, the Pulitzer surprise.
Some kind of food made out of a female chicken.
Yeah, good. Yeah. You did it. You found out.
I found it. I got it. I got it in one. Okay, first questions come to us from Mallard Fillmore, otherwise known as Drinky Duck, the Republican talking point comic duck that has gotten lazier every year to the point where now it's just the duck existing on a void yelling about how much he hates college students every day. It's kind of a weird thing to exist still.
Yeah, I remember back in the day reading that comic strip and it being like, oh, it had full backgrounds and he'd mostly be trying to make some point, and it was a little talky, but it was fine.
Yeah, mostly, he's like working for a newspaper or something way back.
Yeah.
Now he's just always in an easy chair going like, college students have it too easy! Where's my gin?
You know what I hate? Obama!
The end.
Done. Print.
And now, High and Lois.
My God, if that's how it ended, if it was just a three-panel thing of, you know what I hate? Obama! And now, High and Lois. I'd be like, this is great.
That'd be a way better Mallard Fillmore. Hear that, I think Bruce Tinsley, the author of Mallard Fillmore.
Yeah, Bruce Tinsley, known listener of our podcast.
We don't know. If he is, we just put him off, and he'll have this, you know what I hate? System mastery.
Oh, no. Not exposure.
I bet those guys are college students. All right. What is your favorite fictional pantheon of gods in a tabletop RPG? I say fictional so as to rule out versions of real-world pantheons like the Greek or Norse gods. If you can't think of one for an RPG, substitute something from a fantasy novel or video game. Oh, that's a good question.
Problem is, I generally don't care about the fictional pantheons in most games.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, if I'm playing in Faerun or something, I do not care about the gods at all. Because most of the time, they're boring, and if they aren't, then it's usually because they're interfering with something, and then I don't like them anyway.
And then you end up just being like, oh, well, okay, which one of these stupid elf names is the one that gives me the priest domains I need?
Oh, yeah. That's all they are, is I go, alright, who's the guy with the symbol that's a book that gives me these domains I need? Great, that guy. I love him. He's the best.
I like the Greyhawk one, because it's all just original D&D players that have been canonized.
Yeah.
Which is why they have names like St. Cuthbert and Bacchus the Blessed and so on. I like it a little bit. I think if I had to pick a favorite, and the thing is, like, Rifts has a lot of pantheons, but they're all original pantheons, and they've just been like, well, these guys are pretending to be the Sumerian pantheon. They're like cyborgs and mutants and stuff, and they're pretending to be Vishnu, and that book was terrible.
Oh, yeah. Well, the pantheons of the Megaverse, you had, I'd say, probably about 75% of these guys found whatever and are pretending to be that. And then the other 25% is, oh no, these guys actually are, like,
the gods,
alien
yeah.
intelligence gods that were on Earth before.
Yeah. I'm going to say my favorites of all time are the generic D&D pantheon for the monsters. So you've got, like, Grumsh for the orcs and, like, you know, Yinogu for the gnolls and so on. And they're all just drawn from the first edition deities and demigods. They're all drawn as, like, just dorks. They look so cartoonish. They all have big goofy smiles. And then you also get Blibdulpulp, the god for Kuotoa, which is a naked lady with a crawfish head.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, pinchers. That's good stuff. Those are great things. I like that.
That's a good time for people.
Everyone should enjoy that. Everyone should enjoy a naked lobster
head.
That
reverse mermaid.
Yeah, that situation going on. A lot of barnacles on that junk, if you know what I mean, though. You got a little scraping to get in there.
All right. Yeah,
that'd probably be my favorite. You don't have anything in particular?
No, like I said, most of the time whenever there's a pantheon that's given in a game, it usually doesn't matter, or it's annoying to me, so I don't usually like them.
What if you take it out of the gaming sphere?
You
go into fiction. Maybe you do the gods like Ningobble of the Seven Eyes from Fawford and the Grey Mouser.
No.
No?
No. Even then, most of the time it's usually like, don't have much to do with anything or are based on real world gods. So it's like, oh, what do you have? It's Greek gods showing up.
Zeus and his wife, Hera.
Hera, Hera.
You know, originally He-Man's name was supposed to be Hero, and that was changed at the last section or minute, whatever. Anyway, next question from this guy. What is your take on the lyrical and poetic qualities of the following ICP verse? I love how we've become associated with Juggalos because we liked Big Money Restless. I knew that was a calculated risk when we did that.
Well, you know, anytime you mess around with some Juggalos, you're bound to get something.
Yeah, you're going to catch something from those Juggalos. Anyway, the lyrics are, walked in a gypsy's tent with a food stamp and walked out with a magical lamp. Yeah, I met Malenko. He gave me 3 wishes. That night, I fucked 3 fat bitches.
Okay, well, I mean, the obvious question is, was that 1 wish for 3 fat bitches, and do you have 2 left?
Yeah, it'd be 2 more nights of 3 fat bitches each.
Right?
I mean, okay.
So, 1,001 fat bitches nights.
So let's dig through this, first of all. He managed to buy a magical lamp with a food stamp.
Okay, which, granted, I don't know that gypsies would accept that. I also don't know that you could buy that. Having been on food stamps myself, normally you cannot buy any goods that are not food.
Yeah, you have to buy food with them, which is interesting. It could be that the food stamp is incidental and just important to the rhyming scheme.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, he walked in with a food stamp.
Also walked out with
a magic lamp.
Yeah.
Not any sort of relation.
Yeah, he walked in, bought a lamp with money, and walked out with his food stamp.
Still in his pocket.
Also, I like the idea of a food stamp being a thing that's like, it's like one food stamp. This is good for one food.
Yeah, that has not been a thing for many a year that you have had to actually have stamps of food.
Yeah, that's it. But anyway, so after that he met Malenko, which, from what I vaguely understand, having watched the Gathering of the Juggalo infomercials, is pretty much my only research into what Juggalos do, is that they have this whole thing where they have like a fictional circus that they talk about.
They have the Dark Circus.
The Dark Carnival.
Yeah.
And Malenko, I believe, is the ringmaster of the Dark Carnival.
He's like a clown wizard genie.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So, and he gave 3 wishes, and
Now, the other question is, did he just fuck 3 fat bitches and use no wishes on that?
No, that could also be.
Like,
I mean,
I have 3 wishes. And also, just like the food stamp magic lamp situation, this had nothing to do with it.
I mean, this is either Violent J or Shaggy 2 Dope we're talking about. I don't believe, like, they have to work hard for fat bitches if they need them.
Yeah, so I'm guessing maybe he didn't use any of those wishes, and he's got three that he's sitting around. Maybe.
That means he now, at this point, by our interpretation of this reading, he has a food stamp and three wishes. This is a story about gain.
Oh, yeah. This guy has made serious gains.
Oh, yeah.
He is not doing any cardio.
He hasn't used the magical lamp. I mean, look.
He just met Malenko.
Yeah, I walked out with a magical lamp. I met Malenko. He didn't rub the lamp at any point in the song, so...
Granted. So now he's got a magic lamp,
yeah.
A food stamp, three wishes, and he has had three fat bitches.
Yeah, so it's mostly a story about a guy who gets whatever he wants with no repercussions. I assume the next verse is, I rubbed the lamp and the genie came out and kicked my ass and unfucked three fat bitches.
Yes, they have been unfucked.
So there you go. Okay, so what is our take? Well, it's confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just from a standpoint for clear acknowledgement of what's going on, being able to get your message across, it's a little lacking.
Yeah. So... On the other hand, though, there is excellent flow. Stamp and lamp do rhyme.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, wishes and bitches.
It's a bit of a slant rhyme.
It's close enough.
Yeah.
So that's fine. Thing is, I've heard enough in ICP music, having heard about three of their songs, to be able to say that probably sounds terrible when delivered, because they have weird, high-pitched, jankety voices when they say, it just doesn't sound good. Huh. So I assume it doesn't sound very good.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right, let's go to the next questions from Blake S. He starts with, what is your favorite Venture Brothers character? John, you want to start this one?
Probably going to be Dr. Orpheus.
Oh, Dr. Orpheus. Dr. Byron Orpheus.
He's so good.
Yeah.
Because he never has to have the spotlight for an entire episode. Just having him show up and be like, hello, Dr. Venture!
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's great.
I'm a big fan of him, too. I like the Order of the Triad. I like that they've given him a lot of characterization over the years.
He says that you are a crumb bum or a crampan.
Crampon. It's probably a crampon. And then, like, no, I think that's one of those little shoes you lose for ice. I'm going to say my favorite is Gary, otherwise known as Two-Ton-21.
Okay.
Yeah, I really like him. I like that they've given him such a strong arc. If you think about it, of all the characters on the show, he's probably had the most dramatic development as a character.
Oh, yeah. He has shifted the most out of anyone. Because he has gone from complete lazy, dumpy idiot to an actual badass.
I mean, when he's introduced, he's literally describing how the guild... or how.
You guys kidnapped me when I was 15 years old.
He got kidnapped into this life, and yet he has come to own it with his cool Wolverine butterfly claws and his... his armored jacket and all that. He's become a rad character.
Yeah.
So, big fan of Gary, or 21, as he is known.
Yeah.
Also, I'd give a shout-out for the dear departed 24, who I think back when he was alive was one of the funniest characters on the show by a mile.
Yeah. No, the two of them were wonderful. Losing out on that was unfortunate, but, you know, that's fine.
That's all right, because that whole show is basically populated by perfect duos, because that's how... Jackson Public work with, or I think it's a guy named Jackson Public, how the two guys who write that show work with each other. So anytime you hear two guys talking back and forth, like 21 and 24, or the two henchmen Watch and Ward, or just the Venture Brothers themselves, or Billy Quizboy and Pete White,
yeah.
That's always just the two of them bantering. So we lost one source of banter, but here's another.
Yeah.
This is fine. But 24 was so great.
I can already feel my life getting better.
Dude, look, I gave myself battle damage. You look like you have snack on your face. It's so great. So there you go. It's going to be Dr. Orpheus and 21.
There you go.
And what Disney princess do you identify with?
Oh, man. I... don't know. You know what? I actually just watched Frozen for the very first time last night.
How was it?
Well, I watched it for the first time in forever.
Yeah.
And that's a song in there.
No, because I have yet to watch it. Which is why I'm asking you how it is, because I don't know.
It's all right. The weirdest thing for me is it was very DreamWorks animation.
Yeah, you can tell. It's got that kind of porcelain big eyes look.
Well, fucking all of them made DreamWorks face at some point. And I was like, stop it.
Oh, the
You're Disney. You don't need to steal DreamWorks' thing.
The Tood face?
Yeah, it's all just that one smirking, one eyebrow raised.
One eyebrow lowered, sideways Han Solo smile.
Yeah.
It's impossible to do in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Anna in that, yeah. I would identify with because she's a big dumb idiot and it's great.
Is she the actual snow? No, Elsa's the snow queen.
Yeah, Elsa's the snow queen. Anna is just her sister who is like, yay, I'm excited about things.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to say Belle because I really like reading and I like to fuck big hairy dudes.
Yeah, there you go. That makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly...
That's a one-to-one right there.
I know, it's a straight-up edge. I speak a little French. I like to read. I think castles are really cool, and I like to fuck big hairy dudes.
Yeah,
big,
so there we
big
go.
Big monstery bears. So there you go.
All right, done.
Spook Tasty Guy Fietti asks, what non-fictional gaming universes are each of you shockingly well-versed in?
What do you got?
The Star Wars Expanded Universe.
Oh, that's right. You read a shitload of that.
Pre-Star Wars decanonization. I read all of that shit. I read it, no matter how much I hated it, I kept reading it. I was like, oh, fuck you, Kevin J. Anderson. Oh, your Sun Crusher is fucking stupid. What, a rainbow lightsaber that's three times the size of... Oh, I hate you. Oh, I'm going to keep reading, though.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, so I know a lot about the Star Wars Expanded Universe, and not just the canon or decanonized storyline that led up to the children of Han and Leia being Jason and Jaina and Anakin Solo, but also I read all the stuff that was telling you about the characters in the movies, like the minor characters, like, oh, you know that guy in a werewolf mask in the cantina? He's actually an X-Wing pilot. Here's his complicated story. It was amusing to me to read, like, the one of the Tales of Jabba's Palace and realize that, like, everyone survived that fucking skiff barge explosion.
Well, of course they did.
It's every single one of them digs their way out of the dirt and goes off to a better life.
Oh, man. Well, that's the best thing they could have done for him, then, is blowing up that barge.
Yeah. Nowadays, I hate that I know this much about it, but I know everything about the Star Wars Expanded Universe.
Ugh.
I'm like a Wikipedia.
That's real sad. I'm yeah. sad for you.
I know. It's a terrible thing to have, but it's definitely something I'm willing to admit on the air.
Good.
What about you?
Sliders.
Ah, okay. I
own and have watched multiple times the entire series of Sliders, except for, I mean, I've watched it, but I don't rewatch the last half of the last season, where they have replaced everyone but Rembrandt Brown. He's the only one from the original cast still on the show. Everyone else is different, and they're terrible.
That's too bad.
Like, the fact that you can go ahead and replace Jerry O'Connell and it's worse, I'm like, oh man, ooh. You had to really scrape the bottom of that barrel, didn't you?
Get me a Whalen. Get me a Justin Whalen.
Yeah, no, but that show was amazing and great, and then eventually they met fucking The Who, and then the planet was gonna blow up, and they had to take the dumb new girl with them, and it was the worst.
Wait.
And then they got way up their own ass with all the Cro-Mags.
So are The Who like an alien race or something, or are we talking about the band?
No, they met, it wasn't actually the band The Who, it was just members from it were okay. on a planet.
Alright, well, fair enough. That's not that much worse than that stupid Battlestar Galactica thing where they all start singing a Jimi Hendrix song in the middle of it.
Lol.
That can eat a dick. People keep telling me, watch Battlestar Galactica. It's amazing. It's the deepest thing in the world. I watch it. It's, oh, look at that. They're singing all on the Watchtower, and they can't figure out which one's a Cylon, even though their spines light up like lightsabers when they have sex. Makes sense, show. Granted, a lot of it has very good acting. Fine. I admit that part.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm glad you do.
I do. I do. I like Edward James Olmos, and I like the woman who plays the president, Rosalind. That's great. Those two. If the show was called These Two Old People Almost Fuck, I would be in space.
Ah, old people almost fucking in space. That's great.
That's
sold. Sci-fi, pick it up.
Sci-fi, pick that up. That's my sequel to Battlestar Galactica. I think you know it would be amazing. All right, let's move on. Ever consider doing a one-off episode on another kind of game, such as CCGs?
Okay.
Eh.
It maybe, probably not, but let me just tell you, man, there was a time in my life, there was a dark time in my life, where I played all the CCGs.
Oh, yeah. Were you playing that Spellfire and that Vampire Requiem?
Well, it wasn't Vampire Requiem. That's the new Vampire. It was Jihad.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jihad, yes.
It was Jihad, and then you had Rage for Werewolf, and you had the old Star Wars CCG, the Star Trek CCG. I, of course, played a ton of Magic. Mm-hmm. And also, probably the best slash worst one was the Wheel of Time CCG,
mm-hmm.
where it was exactly like the books when you played a game, because nothing happened forever, and then at the very end, everything exploded.
Yeah, that sounds basically... I've read the first chapter of the first Wheel of Time book, and I was like, no, thank you.
That's probably for the best.
I know, and I'm a huge nerd. I read all kinds of shit. And for some reason, it just didn't resonate with me.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, so... Anyway, yeah, I have played Magic, Spellfire, the World of Warcraft TCG.
Oh, and, also that.
Yeah.
I still got my Moonkin deck.
I mean, I still have my Warlock deck, where the only point of the deck is to have my Warlock switch himself out for,
Illidan.
Illidan, thank you. It's a fun deck, but it doesn't work in those raid games that it came out with.
No.
And recently, I got deep into Sentinels of the Multiverse, and so I've been amassing that, and I like it a lot. I know it's not a CCG.
No,
it isn't. It's an LCG, I think, probably.
No, I think it's basically just a card game, because with LCG,
it's living.
You're getting packs usually once a month.
Okay, well, there is at least one more coming up for Sentinels.
Yeah.
Anyway, maybe not CCGs, because they're very hard to... I mean, you could discuss the metaplot of them if you wanted to, I guess. I mean, some of them have really strict metaplots, like L5R.
Yeah.
But other ones are just rambling shaggy dog stories that have been going on for 25 years, like Magic, where you're like, hey guys, let's talk about what happened on Zendikar.
Alright, let's come back again to Zendikar.
Yeah, so, I don't know, maybe not CCGs, but definitely at some point we'll probably talk about other types of games.
Sure.
We might start doing board games at some point, those are always interesting.
You never know.
Yeah, if anything, it'll probably show up as stuff just to talk about in Afterthought episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll run out of RPGs someday.
Don't you worry. I'm sure that eventually people will stop putting out RPGs that suck.
Yeah,
eventually we'll hit a point
that'll happen.
Everything is gold.
All right. He also says, if you ever do one on CCGs, I want the third chair. Sure, no problem.
Yeah, you can have the third chair. You're not on the podcast, but you can have a third chair.
You can have a third chair. You can even be on the show, but don't worry, we're not going to do that show, so, you know. All right, next question comes to us from Actual Snoop Dogg.
Oh, sweet. May I just say, sir, I am a big fan.
Yeah, no, that's great. I'm thrilled to... Mr. Snoop Dogg, I would like, if I may, to take a shower with you sometime. Non-sexual, I just feel like you'd be fun to shower with.
Yeah, you ever get that? That's usually my question for who I want to vote for president, is who would I rather have a casual shower with?
Yeah, that's exactly how I am.
Yeah.
That's why I like Bernie Sanders, because I always have to go to the gym, and I appreciate those old dudes that are just waggling their airing out balls around, and he seems like the type. Bernie Sanders, to me, represents the kind of American who, while naked, puts one leg up on the bench in the gym, and it's just like, yeah.
Yeah.
Let me just swing these around.
He lets you know. He's not ashamed of anything.
Nope. You hear about him getting in trouble for putting his balls in the pool, like, suit drying machine. Just going, Bernie Sanders. All right, so, next question from Actual Snoop Dogg is... The bonus feature characters you've created are now characters in a hip-hop movie, a la 8 Mile. Who's the underdog protagonist, who's the rival who eventually learns to respect them, and who's the shady manager who's going to steal their money, songs, and sweetheart? Alright, I have no long-term memory for the bonus characters that we've created. That is not kept in deep... That's kept in deep storage.
Deep storage.
So I'm going to have to work with, like, the last ones we did.
So the underdog protagonist is Marshall Mathers.
Yeah, that's...
Ha ha, fuck you, actual bonus content character.
That's right, we did create Marshall Mathers and Vin Diesel as bonus content characters.
There you go, he can be the rival who eventually learns to respect them is Vin Diesel.
Oh man, I would love to hear Vin Diesel rap.
Right?
Oh, Vin Diesel, get on that.
And then the shady manager who's going to steal all their money, songs, and sweetheart is Huge McDuck.
Huge McDuck, of course, would be an amazing man. Look, you guys are going to get you... We're going to get all these records together. We're going to be rich, brother. Yeah, okay, there you go. So it's going to be 8 Mile starring Marshall Mathers, and he'll have spaghetti on his spaghetti already, mom's spaghetti.
Yeah.
You only get one spaghetti, so don't blow spaghetti. And then Vin Diesel, who has to learn to respect Marshall Mathers. That seems like it'd be a very hard role for
So
Vin
it's
Diesel.
Basically 8 Mile, but you're replacing Mekhi Phifer. Vin, yeah. And...
I don't remember who plays the manager in 8 Mile.
I don't know. I don't remember.
I'm sure he has one.
There has to be somebody. I never watched it, because I don't care.
I like Eminem, because he does have amazing flow. On the other hand, it's always whining about his girlfriend or something. And it's especially funny to me whenever he's a guest on a
the guest track on his stuff is great, because everyone's like, yeah, I got... money and bitches, and someone else is like, oh man, I'm the best in the rap game. And then he comes out and he's like, dude, I wish all these reporters would quit trying to fuck with me, and man, my girlfriend is a slut. Like, yeah. What the fuck is happening
My
here?
Mom didn't raise me well as a kid. What do you think, Snoop? I have all the guns in the world. He's like, well, okay. Alright, so this guy is like bragging about how owning all the guns and knowing where he can find crystal and vodka and everything. Let's cut back to Eminem and see what he's up to. My lawyer was mean to me. Okay, alright. You seem to be missing the point of party records.
I don't think you understand. You're really just doing Marshall Mathers and the Terrible No Good Very Bad Day.
That's his life. Lemony Mathers in the series of unfortunate events.
Great.
All right. Next questions come to us from Greg Holton. And Greg asks, what's a hobby you've tried but ended up not enjoying? I'm going to say 40K.
I enjoyed 40K, but I think I ended up not enjoying it eventually.
It changes too much, and it's too much of a money sink. I mean, that's just what it is. I mean, I like games where the rules are written to be good rules and not written to keep you buying the models.
Yeah, that was one of the main issues, is every time a new edition or codex came out for that, you're like, oh, everything I have is garbage now, so I guess I need to spend like $1,000 on a new army and hope it doesn't happen to them soon.
Yeah, yeah, my Dark Eldar army is just sitting there in my garage, looking beautiful and being useless right now.
Oh yeah, my entire Chaos Space Marine army sitting in my trunk doing nothing.
Yeah. So that's just that's a sad state where we've tried it, but we just haven't really stuck to it. What's a hobby you've wanted to try but haven't been able? All right, I'm going to reinforce this once again. We are still waiting for San Diegans to invite us to a LARP.
Yeah, come on, man. I've never gone to an actual LARP.
I've only been for about 15 minutes.
I want that Mega Games that we had talked about in another afterthought. I love that Watch the Skies Mega Game. I would love to play in one of those.
I promise to take it seriously for at least 15 minutes.
Yeah, or don't.
Yeah, or not, whatever. But we both, I mean, it's not like we feel like LARPs are the major thing we've been missing out in our lives, but I want to try one.
Yeah.
I want to do a System Mastery LARP trip report so bad.
So bad, guys.
It's my number one episode. I don't care if I have the world's best copy of the world's most exclusive role-playing game. I want to do the LARP report next time we do a LARP.
Great.
So there you go. Jeff, you've been given the opportunity to own one airplane. I was going to say plane, but I figured you'd twist the meaning and say sigil. Oh, that isn't true.
No.
No, I'd say the plane of concordant opposition.
Great.
I get one airplane. All right, I will choose the elemental plane of air.
Lol.
Anyway, what do you choose and why? Well, you know, this is an interesting question. He knows I'm a big airplane nerd, and it's true. And I would probably start by considering picking my favorite airplane of all time, the Lockheed P-38 Lightning. I think it's the coolest airplane, it has the prettiest lines, really important airplane of World War II, just gorgeous. On the other hand, not all that practical to own in today's economy, a World War II airplane with difficult to acquire fuel, extremely expensive repair costs, one seat, very hard to fly, probably not my first choice. I do...
Other planes my age.
Too spoopy. So I'd probably pick something that's flyable and can hold more than one person. And unfortunately, I know more about military planes than I do about anything else. So I'm going to go with a C-141 Starlifter or something like that, where I can conceivably carry everyone I know everywhere I want to, anytime I want.
Yeah, I probably would have just said, I don't know, what's the most expensive thing I could get?
Oh, so you could sell it?
Yeah.
Yeah, how about you just get one of those airplanes that's mentioned in rap songs? Like, I'll take a G6! No, okay. So yeah, there you go. My first choice would be a P-38. After that, some sort of military cargo plane where I could just use it to fly around the world as much as I want.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, you know what? A V-22 Osprey. There you go. Because then not only can I fly it wherever I want, but I can land it wherever I want. Yeah.
Anywhere.
In the butt, no problem.
Done.
Yeah. John, what's a great board game that we can't buy at Walmart?
Most of them?
Let's take a second to review one of the games we've been playing recently that we enjoy.
Well, probably the best one that I've gotten recently is Codenames. Not quite a board game, it's more card-based, but it's still a packaged game that you can get, and it is amazing. The whole thing is you have two teams and a spy master for each team. They know where, in a grid of 25 words, each word is, you're going to have a card that represents the colors for your team. So you've got red and blue. Only the spy masters know which words correspond to what colors. You also have the ones that don't correspond to anything, and then one word, which is an assassin, and if your team guesses it, they automatically lose. And you get one word as a clue. So you get to say, like, all right, blizzard, and then you get to give a number for how many words on the board go with your clue. So you can say, like, blizzard 3, and they could guess...
like snow.
Or Antarctica.
Yeah.
And orcs.
Yeah. So it's a really, really fun game. It's hard to explain directly, but once you start playing it, it's crazy fun.
Oh, yeah. It's super fun. It's... a different type of fun, depending on if you're the spy master or the person playing. Because as the spy master, most of your enjoyment is sitting there just hate-fucking your players, being like, oh my god, get what I'm saying!
And getting so mad that there's some word that's the assassin that's got a million things to do with three of your other words.
Oh yeah, you're like, I would give a clue and it would tie all of these together, but it would also do the assassin and I hate my life.
Yeah, so...
that and then is- as the players, you're mostly just like, oh, I want to guess words, this is fun, yay! And then as the spy master, it's basically like being the DM, and you have a bunch of players that want to do their own thing. And you're like, just follow the goddamn story.
All right. Is it legitimate to say you've read a book if you've only listened to the audiobook?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go. I don't think I've ever actually done that. I think the only audiobook I've ever listened to is a book I also read, and it was a Star Wars Expanded Universe book.
Ugh.
I needed something to do on a long drive when I was young and stupid, instead of being old and stupid and unable to find Star Wars Expanded Universe books anymore.
Now, I think,
because I'd still read them. I'd get back on that fucking horse.
Yeah, I think it was just listen to a Neil Gaiman book on tape. Nice. That was about it.
Yeah. And finally, when can I expect Clint Howard's business to appear in some of the many, many Canadians Cheese Dudes locations? Oh, yeah. Canada loves Cheese Dudes.
Oh, yeah. The nation of Canada?
Yeah.
No. All about it.
I know. I said that on purpose. Were you trying to catch me out?
No.
The great nation of Canada.
Everyone knows that the great nation of Canada loves themselves some Cheese Dude, but especially some Clint Howard's business.
Oh, yeah. And it's true. They are currently understocked on Clint Howard's business in Canada. A lot of that Clint Howard's heavy business and Clint Howard's regular business was bought up by the Florida franchisees, and it's currently at a small premium. We were waiting for him to shake more business loose,
yeah,
so that we can package it and bottle it.
I mean, we have been on back order at the factory for months.
Oh, yeah. For a while, I think, you know, honestly, right now, you probably don't even want to buy any Clint Howard's business that you find for sale in Canada, because it's probably just Ron Howard business with a little apple shavings on top to make it a little more Clinty. Yeah, you don't need that. No one wants Ron Howard's heavy business, trust me.
No one wants Ron Howard's Clinty business.
Ron Howard's Clinty business. Oh my god. Ron Howard, if you are listening, Ron Howard, make a movie called Clinty Business. I want 55-year-old Clint Howard to, with his big movie maker ponytail, to skate into a room in just a shirt and socks. Hey! I got my business everywhere.
Oh, god.
All right. Next questions come to us from Ted Cheddar, and he wants to say, what's the best way to do a Barrier Peak-style sci-fi fantasy mashup in RPGs? Should I surprise the players or let them in on it from the start? So Barrier Peaks is a famous D&D module where your party comes across a spaceship, and they have to fight, like, UFO denizens and stuff in it. It's really fun. It's from way, way back in D&D's history. It's a great story. So what's the best way to do this? Should you involve the players, or should you take them by surprise?
Take them by surprise.
And especially, why just use UFOs? My favorite is the idea of having, like, just World War II spill out into D&D.
Yeah, just a portal opens up, and it is to the plane of World War II.
Yeah, and just airplanes and tanks and landing craft come out of it, and you're like, oh, shit, can we fight these? Yes, magical weapons cut through tanks like butter.
Amazing, right?
This is going to be super fun for you guys, just hacking up tanks. So, surprise, definitely surprise. What goes into the best burger?
Meat.
And peanut butter. And lettuce.
And mayonnaise.
Nope. We got close, but we don't reach an accord on that. We both have gone on record before, might as well just go on record again. A peanut butter burger is awesome.
Yep. You get some bacon.
Bacon.
Some peanut butter.
But peanut butter.
Some burger.
Some burger.
Some buns. You eat that motherfucker.
Yeah. Put a little lettuce on there, and if you're one of the people who likes mayonnaise, put mayonnaise on. Although, to be honest, I feel like even if you like mayonnaise, this burger is better without.
Yeah, you don't need it.
Yeah, because the peanut butter is turning into a sauce. The heat of the burger meat is turning the peanut butter into a tasty sauce.
Yeah.
So try that sometime, and don't judge us unless you have, because it is awesome.
Do not judge me.
Yeah, you don't have the position.
You have not lived my life.
I'm going to compete in a jiu-jitsu tournament for the first time. As the foremost archaeologist of complex grappling rules, what should I do to optimize my rounds? Oh, well, first of all, you're going to need to figure out a way to get more minor actions.
Yeah, if you can do that, great.
Yeah.
Now, what you're going to want to get is as many solar brawl charms as you possibly can.
That's definitely true. As many solar brawl charms. Because not only are you going to get to go first in an initiative round, but also you're going to just put your person right into crash.
Oh, yeah. You're just going to crash them into the ground. They're going to have so many onslaught penalties.
Yeah.
And then you just do whatever you want with them.
Yeah. Oh, literally whatever you want.
Yeah.
I mean, especially if you get your jiu-jitsu tournament like 12 or 13 miles offshore, then you could just do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Because of the implication.
Ah, yes, I remember. 12 to 13 miles offshore is that great casino, the implication.
So, there you go. Use solar grappling charms, you'll be fine. Or, barring that, deadly beastman transformation.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, dear Thing 1 and Thing 2, I am Snorlax Auerbach, the civilian identity of Omnicrom the Nowhere Man.
Okay.
All right, sure. I have more questions for you to ply your trade on. Number one, why is it that only a maximum of 6 angels can dance on the head of a pin?
Well, any more than that, and it would be an orgy, and God doesn't like that.
No, God's disapproving of those sorts of things. Also, angels dancing, let's get this straight, is horrifying. Because angels are just like collections of wings and eyeballs and flames.
Yeah, it's just wheels.
Yeah, just wheels and legged throne things. You don't want to see them dance. Their slash dance command is just ghiblies.
It's the worst.
Yeah. If you had a TARDIS that was inconveniently stuck as one object, what object would that be? I don't know. What's a TARDIS?
It's the Doctor's...
The what? Who? The what?
Yes, who?
Huh?
Doctor who?
Doctor. I'm asking you. What doctor?
The Doctor.
Who?
He's on first.
No. Pretending I don't know what Doctor Who is my favorite way to annoy Doctor Who fans.
Yeah.
No, okay. So the TARDIS is the phone booth that can travel through time and space. Sure.
Yeah. So, stuck as one object, what would it be?
Time machine.
DeLorean.
No, DeLorean. The airplane from Time Chaser. So, it's stuck as a useful time-traveling spaceship. Isn't this horrible?
It's the worst. Actually, no. I would definitely make it look like the worst beat-up, shitty car, because then no one would want to even try and steal it. It'd be great. And then I'd get in, and it would be huge inside.
Yeah, okay. Let's see, I would probably disguise mine as a comfy king-size bed.
Yeah.
Because I'm lazy.
And then a bunch of homeless people just sleeping on your TARDIS.
I'm like, damn it, get off my TARDIS. But then I travel through time and space, and they'll just fall 2 feet to the ground. I'm like, hey, come on now.
Oh, hey now.
On a very slightly more serious note, I have always wanted to play an RPG in roughly the setting of the obscure, incomplete PlayStation JRPG Saga Frontier. I have vaguely heard of Saga Frontier. To give you an example of the game's world, my party in the current file of Saga Frontier consists of an amnesiac robot made out of junk, a supermodel turned vigilante armed with a bazooka, a mad scientist doctor who absorbs monsters and uses death magic, a man who is genetically engineered to be the perfect mage to kill the devil, and my protagonist who is currently a crystal tree that generates magnetic storms. Is Gamma World the right system for me, or can you think of something better?
It's Gamma World.
It's Gamma World. It's definitely Gamma World, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the only problem you're going to run into is it's harder to be a human in Gamma World.
But that's fine.
Yeah, you can reskin back to humans if you want. That's definitely a good Gamma World storyline. I mean, to me, I feel like Gamma World would also cover your need to play Chrono Trigger.
I was about to say, with your list of dumb characters, this was very Chrono Cross to me.
Yeah, it is very Chrono Cross. We're like, what's in your party? Oh, I got a fat chef who fights with a slingshot.
I've got an onion knight.
Yeah. I've got a flower and, let's see, a little tiny dragon.
A little alien.
Two-tailed pink dog.
Some kind of mermaid.
Some kind of mermaid. Some kind of fighting karate rabbit girl. I mean, Chrono Cross was a terrible game. It had the best cast of stupid characters you could play ever.
Well, it's because you could just get, like, 150 different characters.
There were
like,
a grand total of 56, of which 52 were available on a single playthrough.
Wow.
Yeah. I know this because I've played that game 7 different times to get different endings.
I barely managed to get an ending.
I love the music in it, so that helped. That kept me going. All right, so there you go. And I believe that's all the questions we have for today.
Yep, that is it. We have run out of time. If we did not get to your question, or if you've got one that you want to get to us, let us know. You can give us your questions on any of the social medias. Give us on Facebook. You can do it on Twitter. If you're going to do it on Twitter, use the hashtag afterthought. That way we can try and search it faster.
Yeah, that would be very useful, because we have to scroll through a lot of likes and retweets and what have you, and I always lose them in there.
Yeah, so that way we can actually find it. So if you just hashtag afterthought for a question for us, that'll make it easier for us.
Yeah, so thanks to, I think it's Spookatasty Guy Fieri, who started doing that this week and gave us the idea. So thanks. We're going to steal that idea, because it's a good one. Hashtag your questions afterthought.
Yeah, and otherwise you can get us systemmastery@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. Or just go to the website itself, leave comments underneath the episodes.
Yeah, you can do any of these things. Or all of this and more.
Yeah. You can also support us on Patreon if you want.
Yeah, for just cents a day.
Yeah, you can keep us at bay for 10 cents a day. That's the rhyme.
Yeah, and we keep the doctor away.
For 10 cents a day.
Yeah. We keep the doctor away.
Well, I keep the doctor away. I don't care for that series.
Aw, that's sad.
I'm very surprised you're not a bigger fan.
Of Doctor Who?
Yeah, because it's time and dimensional travel.
I love it. It's great.
It should be your shit, and I never see you dealing with it. Because normally, you can tell you're Doctor Who fan, because they're, like, trying to give you a sonic screwdriver right now, and they have a TARDIS scarf, and I'm saying that they have a very, very dedicated fan base.
Yeah, well, that's always been a thing with me, is I've never gotten into the point where I'm fanatic about anything that I love.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I'm like, oh, that's really great, I like that. That's where it ends. I've never gotten to the point where I'm like, I need to drape myself in my fandom.
That is true. All right. So, anyway, thanks so much for listening, and have a wonderful week.
Or don't.
Or don't. I don't care. Fuck it. Everything's bullshit.
Yeah. That's fine. I'm just going to go watch TV for a while. Try not to bother me.
I don't even have a TV.
Oh, let's get ice cream.
Ice cream, dude, yes.